there's no reason for him to suffer, and yet he does suffer. And then he's at the end of the book, he's risen up back to not just his former life, but he's given riches beyond his wildest dreams. He's given a wife, he's given a house, he's given cattle, he's given livestock, everything. So as it were, a righteous one whom is tempted does not give in to temptation, and then goes under suffering, even though he didn't give in to temptation, and then is risen up at the end with all of the glory and the riches and honor. I mean, what other better picture do you get than that's being Jesus?
Welcome to the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, a show devoted to bridging the gap to the historic Reformed Christian faith. Listen in as two friends, a layman, Nick, and a pastor, Peter, discuss core doctrines of our confessional traditions with seminary and college professors, seasoned pastors, and more. These seasonal episodes exist to reach those outside the church, those in the pews, behind pulpits, and in the academy with rich truths of Reformed theology, and remind ourselves weekly how the finished work of Jesus Christ changes everything.
Hey, y'all, it's Peter. I wanted to let you know something that I'm really excited about. The Orthodox Presbyterian Church, the OPC, is exploring a new church plant in central Orange County in the Tustin or Irvine area, of which I'm part of. We're gathering interest for an informational session about this church plant and upcoming Bible studies. If you or someone you know is interested, go to our show notes, click the link OPC and the OC on top, and subscribe for our updates. Please share this with your friends and family. Anyone who's looking for a confessionally reformed, evangelistically minded church in the heart of Orange County. I hope to meet you soon.
Hey everybody, this is Pastor Danny Hyde from the Oceanside United Reformed Church. I want to invite you out to our church. We meet in sunny Southern California, here in San Diego, and we meet at the Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad, right along the ocean, as you can see, the Pacific. And we meet every Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning. We hear the Word of God, we hear the Gospel preach, we have the Lord's Supper every Sunday morning, and then we have Sunday school at about noon for kids. We come again together at 5 o'clock every night, Sunday night, for teaching, prayer, and singing. And then we also have various midweek groups, Bible studies, men's, women's, and also other Bible studies as well throughout the week. So I want to invite you out to worship with us. If you know anybody in the area here in North County of San Diego, invite them as well. Let them know. You can find out more about us on our website, oceansideurc.org, or also on all those various social media. You'll find us as well. God bless.
Hey, this is Peter, one of the co-hosts. We're doing something new. All ads will be fronted before the episode for unimpeded listening pleasure. A quick plug for our show, Guilt, Grace, Gratitude. Would you consider giving to our show? We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so your donations are now tax deductible. We've got two options to give. One, email us at guiltgracepod@gmail.com if you'd like to send a check or use our direct donor link. Or two, go to our show notes and click on our donor box link to give a recurring donation or a one-time gift. You can also click on our Patreon account in the show notes and sign up for monthly exclusives, merchandise, coupon codes with publishers we work with, giveaways for our subscribers, and much more. All donations were gifted are used exclusively to pursue our mission to bridge the gap to Reformed Christian theology. Would you join us? Now, on to the show.
Hello, everyone. Yet once again, it's another day of fresh grace and mercy. This is the Guilt, Grace, Gratitude podcast, where we bridge the gap to Reformed Christian theology for your listening pleasure. Today's season 7 episode, we're covering the book of Job. It's not the book of Job for you guys out there that are new to the Bible. It's spelled the same way, but the book of Job, it's within the wisdom and lyrical books. More specifically, Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes are grouped together in the wisdom literature, just so you guys can kind of understand the different genres and things like that of what we're going to be talking about in this particular book. It's one of the oldest books written in the Old Testament. So it's very interesting, fascinating. It's got a lot of commentary out there about it. And so we'll dip into that a little bit more, but we'll try to stay on track of what we're trying to focus on and finding Jesus throughout all the Bible and how this book points to what Christ did. So, and is doing. So,
yes.
Yep. And so for show note reminders, if you guys are new to our podcast, this is some helpful tips of how you can engage with us more and utilize us to the maximum. If you go to our YouTube page, all these episodes are categorized and have video up there. You can do playlists where you see all the book club episodes that we do on Thursdays, as well as our seasonal episodes that we do on Mondays. And so, of course, this is a seasonal episode and it's season 7. So you'll see it in order there. If YouTube is a better thing for you, subscribe, comment, say nice things, like things, that kind of stuff. And, but if podcast, this is primarily a podcast. So if that's more your jam, you like listening in the car and your headphones, that kind of thing. Any podcast app, you just, follow our show, subscribe to it. I think it's still called subscribe. And you can rate and review us too. That helps with the algorithm to make sure that our show is easier to find for people. We've been doing this podcast for about 3.5 years and we've been growing, but we could always keep growing more and more. So we have a few different types of audiences out there. We try to keep things edified for both Christians and non-Christians. And this season is more of a biblical theology focus. So we're following Christ through the story of redemption through all these books of the Bible. So we are a nonprofit 501c3. So donations are happily acceptable. you can get tax deductions and things like that. So ask us more questions about that kind of stuff, but feel free to becoming a bridge builder where you can donate to us. We don't use this for any sort of way of us making a lot of money or anything. It just goes back to the show so we can grow. We both, all three of us, have our own jobs outside of this, so don't worry. And then
I got a free shirt out of it. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, this
a free shirt, a free cup, free mug. I didn't wear my shirt today, but yeah,
that's okay. But yeah, so you can get go to our website.
Shameful plug.
Yeah, no shame in that. I mean, we put a lot of hard work into this.
Shameless
stuff,
so. Plug, I should have said.
Yes. So if you could get a coffee mug, another day of grace and mercy, t-shirts, things like that. Am I missing anything, Peter and Danny?
Nate Park Church Finder.
Okay.
Is that up on the site?
Why don't you just explain that? Because yeah, go ahead and explain. What's a Nate Park Church Finder, Peter?
I forget the exact website. We have it linked in our show notes, Nate Park Church Finder. Mm. And when you type in your zip code, you will find the nearest Reformed or Presbyterian churches to your area. Because this, our goal for the show is to drive you to the local church.
Nate Park. What's Nate Park, by the way?
North American Presbyterian Reformed Council.
Danny knows, just so the audience is like, how's Danny? Yeah, know? No,
he knows. it's just like a... I mean, it's a bunch of denominations.
Yeah. It's not an official denomination. It's like an umbrella. Yeah.
It's just like an umbrella, you know, organization that, you know, we kind of band together for, you know, common cause. And there's not a whole lot that's done, but it's just, it's a good way for you to know that these are confessional churches, you know. I mean, obviously, like, we, you know, no human being can vouch for every single church on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, you know, going in that they have confessions of faith that are the same ones that, you know, we talk about.
Yep.
So, yeah, it just helps you get in the door.
It's a centralized way of finding all the sister denominations of Reformed and Presbyterian churches, because they're usually kind of numerous and small and maybe kind of like vague and hard to find. So if you make a website where they all are together, like the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, the Presbyterian Church in America, the United Reformed Church, and there's Korean Reformed churches, there's ones in Canada, there's... Yep. The RPCNAs, there's like just a ton out there. So
and you'd figure like in the 21st century that we would have a website that has, you know, all of us on there and like, you know, an easy finder, but you know, we're old school. So I guess we kind of do it the old school way.
We're old and reformed and
pull out the phone book, yellow pages.
Yeah. We don't have very good websites. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and pull out your time. Yeah. Pull out your yellow pages, find the church's name, and then pull out your Thomas guide to find where we're at, you know?
Yeah. All right. So we're getting on with Job. How about this? How about I jump? Well, let's talk about resources real quick. Do you guys have any fun things that you want to bring out that are some commentaries or books out there about Job?
Yeah, I got four. I'll name them off real quick. This one comes out soon, but I've seen the proofs for it and I've read his other stuff. It's Dwayne Garrett, who I think is a professor at Southern Seminary. He wrote a book in the Evangelical Exegetical Commentary series with Lexham on the book of Job. His other stuff is really good. And so this one's going to be good.
Then, did that book come to us already or no?
No, this comes out in July.
Oh, okay.
And then another one, Job, from Barry Webb, who I think is a professor in Australia, somewhere in Australia. I forget exactly where. Yeah, his emeritus professor of Old Testament at Moore Theological College in Newtown, Australia. This one's really good. This one's more biblical theological. So I've read portions of this. So if you guys want kind of what we're doing, I will go to this commentary. And then Nick and I, 2 years-ish ago, talked to Eric Ortlund on Piercing Leviathan, which if you want the best single book treatment on the book of Job, that's where you got to go.
What is Leviathan? A crocodile or hippopotamus?
I'll talk about it at the end of the episode. I'm gonna delay gratification on that.
There you go.
That was a very popular book.
Popularizing, yeah. Oh, cool. No, this is 2021. Yeah. So we talked to the end of 2021. And then spring of 2022, he kind of wrote a popular level book on Job, taking that more academic leaning book and popularize it. Suffering Wisely and Well, The Grief of Job and the Grace of God, from Eric Ortlund. Because he also has some personal life issues that he was struggling with. And also, he's an expert in Hebrew and Old Testament. Teaches at Oak Hill College in London. Those are my resources. Danny, what about you?
There's so many, but I'll mention just one by Howell Jones.
Yep.
This is published by Evangelical Press. I think
it's Westminster, California professor.
Yeah, Evangelical Press. So Dr. Jones is a Welshman. He's back in Wales in his twilight years, but yeah, taught at Westminster. Here he came after I graduated, but got to know him really well. Job was one of his all-time favorite books. He's the one that brought John Calvin's Sermons on Job into print in English back in the old days at the Banner of Truth. He was the editor there, but so Howell Jones on Job, Evangelical Press commentary. It's fairly handy, easy to navigate. It's like 300 pages total, which, you know, so it's real pithy, real short. And it's a helpful book for anybody to pick up.
Cool. And then Nick, what about you?
Yeah. You guys already know what I'm going to say. I've been using this for all the whole season. I have all these
other publishers by the way,
the Zondervan.
Zondervan
keeps kicking us down with, keep kicking us down with free books. We appreciate it. Zondervan, shout out to Zondervan.
Yeah, it's a NIV Biblical Theology Study Bible. If the audience has, and you guys remember this, the early in the season, I had like a ton of resources and it was so overwhelming. Like a lot of it obviously overlapped in there, and the same thing is just adding a lot of extra time. And I had some good resources here and there, but I think things have flushed out and filtered down where I'm like, I could probably, just the sake of time for our interviews, like just kind of use this as a lot of the meat and substance.
Let's see if Nick is prepared for my next question.
No, I'm not. I don't know which editor did Job. I know you're gonna ask. I should have written. Gosh. I always forget.
What day check. Nick is gonna remember who edited that portion of it?
Actually, I could probably.
Doesn't it tell you at the front or no?
That's what I would think. It probably has editors of different books.
While you're flipping to it, do you guys know what Zondervan or Zondervan means?
I have no clue. What does it mean? I know it's. I assume it's Dutch.
It means no last name.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, like no surname. Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
So back in the days of Napoleon, he forced everybody in the Netherlands to pick surnames, last names, to organize people into groups and like categorize people into, he's very organized. And so people chose all kinds of like silly last names. So Zondervan means no last name. So it was like a mockery. Yeah. Zondervan's my favorite, but running in second is Vent Pist, which means from the urine.
Yeah.
There you go, man. So.
Well, I did.
The Dutch.
I see T.D. Alexander.
T. Desmond Alexander. That's a solid guy. Yeah. We've interviewed him before.
Yep. Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. He does all the wisdom and lyrical books.
He's really good. Yeah. I like him a lot.
That's good. And then I have another one. I did not read this one, but it looks good. And we've had a couple guests on from it, and we get so many books in the mail that I'm like, oh, this just talks about Job. So I thought I'd point out, did you guys get this in the mail? Wrestling.
Oh, I like, there's some stuff. I'm not a huge fan of him, but I do like what he does with Job. Yeah. Who's I do like Kynes on Job.
So
it's a father son combo.
Bill Kynes and Will Kynes.
Yeah. I don't think Danny has that one. That was last year.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But here's
the BD. Good. Yeah. That was a good grace gratitude BD. That was before Danny.
BD. The AD and BD. it's Defiant Faith in the Face of Suffering, Wrestling with Job. What stuck out with me, this is IVP academic publication. Yep. The thing that stuck out to me too is we've had a couple guests on that wrote an endorsement, Philip Ryken and Colin Hansen, both wrote endorsements on it. And the blurb is just saying the unique richness of the Book of Job cannot be simply explained. It must be experienced. While Job presents challenges for scholars, ministry leaders, and lay people, it also contains powerful lessons on faith and perseverance in the face of suffering.
All right, let's get ready for a book club.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, perfect. So, all right, let's do this. So I wanted to bring up the structure and, I'm just going to name off the structure at a high level. And then that way you guys can, we'll comb through it from there. So I saw,
while you do it.
Yeah. Awesome. So prologue. Chapters 1 and 2 written in prose. And then chapters 3 through 26 is Job's lament. And then you have after that, the dialogue, which is kind of overlaps within Job's lament. Cause it's chapters 4 through 27, where you get the three cycles of speeches from his friends, Eliphaz, Elihu, Bildad, and Job kind of all talking amongst each other. And then the next one is Job's first monologue. That's chapter 28, where wisdom is found. And then Job's second monologue and final defense, chapters 29 to 31. And then the Elihu speeches. Elihu's the youngest of the friends, and he kind of has the wisest kind of like statement at the end. And then Job doesn't respond to him. And then after that, God's speeches and Job's responses, chapters 38 to 42, verse 6. And then the epilogue, chapter 42, written in prose. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that's like maybe not high level. That's a little more in the weeds.
But I dipped in a few times, but
you could say like prologue is chapters 1 and 2, like the meat of it's chapters 3 through 37. And then 38 to 42 is the epilogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously you can go deeper after that.
Yeah. I preached through Job. I mean, I preached through I think I did 10 sermons on Job a while back. And that was kind of a general outline. The one that Peter just mentioned that I'm familiar with.
Okay.
The one Nick gave is like, if you get a little bit deeper into the weeds.
Yeah.
The one I gave is like, if you take a very broad overview.
Kind of simple. Yeah. It was kind of a simple one. So
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that was the general
outline. It's got an epilogue, it's got a main body, and then it's got a prologue, it's got a main body, it's got an epilogue. Yep.
Okay.
It's all good.
Something that's cool, interesting, old, whatever you want to call it, about the book is it's one of the oldest books written in the
as far as we know. Yeah.
Yeah. And just the place and time and context to wrap our heads around, it's one of those patriarchal periods where it's like around Abraham's time, probably, right? I mean, it was in the land of Uz in within Edom.
Uz or Uz?
Uz.
Uz. It's spelled, Uz, it's like spelled Uz, but it's pronounced Uz. Like Uz.
Yep.
Uz, you
can
say
short. It's a short Uz. Vowel in Hebrew.
So is it Uz and booze or Uz and buzz?
Uz. I would say Uz, but I heard someone it's say Uz, Uz
yeah.
when I was.
Yeah. I'm just. I'll give you a hard time.
No, I'm good. Believe me, I'm gonna botch saying some stuff.
It reminds me of the one time I was at his Dutch family's house. I was a guest preacher a long time ago as a young guy, and they had me over for lunch after morning service.
Yep.
And the Dutch thing is like you pull the Bible out after every meal, read the Bible, and pray.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they're reading the Old Testament somewhere in the Kings, you know, they're like, oh, we're in Kings 16 at verse 3-12, or, you know, that was our morning reading or afternoon reading. So he gets to it and he's like, you know, and the Lord said to difficult name, go forth and fight a battle to against difficult name. You're like,
that's such a Dutch thing to do.
He kept saying difficult name whenever I'm like, what is he talking about? You know,
such a Dutch thing to do. Yep. Don't worry. They all say words differently.
There's only two letters in Uz, and I heard one guy call it Uz, so I was like, oh, I'm gonna pronounce it that way.
Yeah,
but
it's a short vowel, right? Yeah, it's a short vowel. So,
yep.
This is in the time around the patriarchal period in Abraham. This is before Israel was around. So.
I'd say it's highly conjecturable, but it's generally where people place it.
Yeah,
because the book really doesn't give any like historical time markers.
So whether or not Job's an Edomite or Hebrew, I don't know if that's a conversation to have, but we know this is that's where he was living. And so obviously, if you guys haven't picked up, if the audience hasn't picked up on this yet or know anything about Job, it's a book about suffering and why God will allow suffering to a really good people, which Job is like the most righteous man. And it's a courtroom setting in the beginning. It's really interesting because we see, we get a sneak peek into the heavenly realm, and it's a courtroom setting, which God is the judge. He's the creator of everything. He's in charge of everything. And Satan is the accuser. And he's saying, you know, if you can find, and God's actually introduced.
I was about to say, you got it flipped.
Yeah, God actually introduces Job to Satan, and Job questions if you took all these good things away from Job. Yeah, what?
You said Job questions. Satan questions.
Satan questions God and says, if you take away all these good things from him, well, I doubt he'll honor you. And so that's kind of how it starts off, and then God allows the devil, Satan, to do only certain things. Like he's limited to make Job suffer a certain way and not more than that. So we get kind of an understanding of like what Satan is allowed to do. You know, there's limitations, you know. So I don't know.
And it's the Satan, by the way, in Hebrew, right?
Hasatan.
Hasatan,
the adversary.
Yeah. Yeah, the Satan.
The accuser. Yeah.
Because Hasatan is probably not even his name. It's just his office.
His role. Yeah,
it's interesting. I was reading this earlier. I should have remembered. I should have written it down. But like almost every time Satan is used in the Hebrew Bible, it has the definite article in front. Almost every time.
Hasatan.
So yeah, it's kind of interesting how, that title or that office, that thing he does.
Yeah.
Is always like, you know, in the definite, you know, the Satan, the accuser, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Accuser. Well, can you guys comment any more about that, like that opening scene, sneak peek into heaven where it's a courtroom setting with God and, you know, Satan there talking about Job? Anything?
Yeah. I mean, go for, sorry, go Danny, for it. Go, no, you so go for it.
I was going to say, I remember Dr. Ortland's conversation. This is again a long time ago, but like his conversation really stuck with me on the book of Job because it opened up, at least his book opened up Job in a way that I had never really seen before. But he compared the beginning of Job to both Genesis 3 and Isaiah 6, where Isaiah 6 is Isaiah is up in the throne room of God, which is not too dissimilar from where the adversary and Yahweh is, although you quibble that that's the throne room if that's where the adversary is. So there's some stuff there, not really sure where, but it's like it's where Yahweh is.
Yep.
And then you have Genesis 3 because you have Satan walking, just kind of perambulating in this area. For some reason, perambulate, that was the way somebody translated the Hebrew word for walking. And it's that, like, we all laughed really hard when he did that. But it's like walking around. But it's not too dissimilar from what is described of Adam and Eve in the garden, where they're walking around with God. God is walking with them. So there's this somewhat communal aspect, like a garden aspect in some respect, a paradisal aspect in some respects. But yeah, I remember him describing that this is somewhat reminiscent of the garden scene. And especially so with temptation that you get, that the adversary Satan then lays on top of Job, which is not a dissimilar temptation that you get with Adam and Eve in the garden.
Well, yeah, that's true. Danny, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, I'll just kind of keep it on a theological plane. You know, so at a minimum, it shows us that, you know, the Lord is God. He's in control of the whole universe.
Not Satan versus God. It's Satan under God's dominion.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he's in control of the whole universe, including the realm that we can't see. So spiritual realm, the realm of God, right? The realm of, I mean, there's God, then there's like the realm that he's created, right? The heavenly realm. He's in control of all of that. And, you know, even, you know, powerful, seemingly omniscient or omnipresent, although he has to get from one place to another. So, you know, a being that seems more powerful than us, still is under the authority of God, and you know, has to get permission to do, at a minimum, you know, this kind of a thing, like, you know, kind of temptations and kind of, you know, scourgings and, trying to lure someone away from God, you know, at a minimum, you know, we're learning that is something that, you know, it's by permission. It's sort of, so, you know, the opening of this, of Job always reminds me of the story of Jesus and Peter, where
also Jesus and Judas Peter, John 13.
Is that
or, it's between John 11 and 13. 14. Sorry, it's John 14. End of John 14.
Story where Jesus tells Peter that Satan has asked to sift you like wheat.
Yep. That's not John 14, but he does kind of the same thing with Judas, where he says, hey, whatever you're going to do quickly. And then Satan enters into Judas's body in John 14. So it's like Jesus gives Satan permission to do what he's about to do.
Yeah, so it's like pretty mind-blowing that, like, you know, Jesus is like, hey, the devil has asked permission. He doesn't say permission. The devil has asked to sift you like wheat.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, where does that come from? Until I tell him yes.
Yeah, it's like, that's the Old Testament. You know, that comes from the Old Testament. It comes from Job, at least from Job.
Yep.
Where Satan, you know, if Satan wants to tempt, lure, somehow cause calamity, scourging, whatever on a believer, like, he has to come before the Lord, ask permission. And obviously, like, you know, we look at that passage in the context, like, Jesus is saying he has to ask me for permission. What does it say about Jesus? Right. So there you go.
He's God.
I guess maybe to add on one more thing, I said on Sunday, Sunday morning, I preached through Ephesians, and I got to the first chapter, end of the first chapter of the prayer, where the Lord says that the power of God that raised up Jesus from the dead is at work in you. And one of the things I said was, you know, this is one of the reasons why, imposing my theology on everybody else, but I think this is pretty standard Reformed theology, that we don't believe that Christians can be demon possessed.
Correct.
We can be oppressed, but not possessed. One of the reasons is that it's God, you know, who's at work within us. That's Ephesians 1. And then in this context, in Job, it's similar in terms of, Satan couldn't even touch his body without the Lord's permission, let alone enter it, right? As an encouragement to believers out there, that the Lord is in control. Like, there are lots of things in this life that we can be fearful of, and lots of things that can cause us alarm. And you know, yeah, lots of mental, psychological, physical, emotional, psychophysical problems in our lives. And yeah, there's probably a spiritual component to it as well. Mm-hmm. But God is the Lord and he's your Lord. And, you know, don't be afraid.
Yep. And that's nice. Yeah, you get that. Yeah, Job 1-2. Yeah, you get the permission to tempt, because the temptation doesn't actually come until, I think, Job 3.
Yep.
Because all this stuff is taken away, Job 1-2. And if you notice, who's the one who tempts Job? Because it's Satan, obviously, is given permission, but it's actually Job's wife who's the one
who tempts him. Yep.
Which, again, what does that remind us of?
Eden. Garden
this
of Eden.
Reminds us of Eden, where the woman is the one who tempts the man.
Oh, you see, there you go. There you guys go again. It's your patriarchal worldview.
Yeah,
that's right. Please don't read. As I said that, I was like, I know somebody's going to be freaking patriarchal, but that doesn't mean the woman is possessed by Satan. And that's like,
doesn't mean that. Your wife.
Or does it mean that all the times that some kind of temptation happens, it doesn't mean that God only uses wives. Crime,
that's how this worked.
In this situation, it was the wife, you know. In a different situation, it could be, you know, the husband, it could be a kid.
You look at Abraham in Genesis 12 and 15, or Genesis 12 and 16, sorry, it's Abraham is the one who tempts, because he tempts Pharaoh with his own wife. So it's not just the wife who
and
tempts.
God told Abraham to listen to his wife Sarah at one point too, and so
this
is not saying like, everyone, husbands, don't listen to anything your wife tells you. Horrible advice.
Peter tells Christian husbands that if they don't treat their wives in an understanding, gentle way, that God won't even hear their prayers. So,
which is
the whole Bible together. The whole Bible's in one book. So,
which would have been freaking shocking in that time period that Peter was
in a Roman society. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Roman society, like women were the lowest of the lowest of the lowest of the low. And so when Peter says, hey, respect your wives, they would have been like, wait, what? Yeah. What? We're supposed to respect our wives. We're supposed to love them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, real quick, before we go to the next section, I thought this was good and appropriate. Based on this first section we're talking about within the first couple chapters of Job, the Heidelberg Catechism actually has a really good question answer on question answer 28. How does the knowledge of God's creation and providence help us? We can be patient in adversity, thankful in prosperity, and for the future, we can have good confidence in our faithful God and Father that no creature will separate us from his love. For all creatures are so completely in his hand that without his will, they can neither move nor be moved.
Yeah. So I actually brought that up this last Sunday, preaching through the end of John 15, which is the world's enmity against Jesus followers. Mm-hmm. And suffering like Job can really cause you to question your profession of faith, if Jesus loves you, if you're really a Christian. And that's really hard when you're in the midst of this. Like, this wouldn't be happening if Jesus really loved me. This wouldn't be happening if I was a real Christian. But instead, suffering unites us to Christ. Suffering is the thing that shows us that we are of Christ, because Christ is the one who suffered on our behalf. And so then we suffer as image bearers of Christ. This is particularly meaningful to me. And I think a lot of other people, where suffering so often causes you to question some stuff, but.
Yeah. Is that suffering going to make you run towards Christ or run towards sin?
I wouldn't even go that far. I focus less on what suffering produces, but on who suffering reminds you of. Mm-hmm. Suffering reminds you of the one who suffered on your behalf.
Yep. True.
And so you suffer. So I wouldn't even say, if you say, how does suffering like make you run towards Christ? And it's like, am I not running fast enough towards Christ in my suffering? I'm not using this enough towards Christ. Sure. So it's knowing the suffering one who suffered on your behalf. But
Oh, cool. Yeah. So within that first section, obviously Satan is the catalyst. He didn't initiate a conversation with the Lord, and he didn't mention Job's name first. God did. So once the Lord introduces Job to him, Satan was very aware of him. So he was almost kind of like, now I know about Job because you allowed me to know about
him. What you have in the garden, you have the serpent who comes in to Eden to go tempt Adam and Eve, who wouldn't have had access had he not been allowed to.
Yeah, cool. And so then we move into the second section, which is, chapters 3 through 26, Job's lament. Job is more the protagonist now. What do you guys have to comment on this section of, you know, more Job's lament? You know, kind of we're looking at chapters 3 through 26.
I'll be very broad. And
yeah,
his suffering sucks. It's to lose.
They use a technical theological term. Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard for me to get too like technical on this stuff, but the dude just lost his entire family. His house burned down. Everything that he owned is now dust and ashes. It would make he begins this to saying, I was born of the dirt and I will return to the dirt. And so, we can look at this and say how we ourselves going to suffer in the same way that Job suffered. But I think that discards what Job actually went through. And then that can make us glib on suffering and those who suffer. It's like, oh, just respond the way that Job responded. And like, just be happy that you have Yahweh. And it's like, that just doesn't do it for a lot of people. Like his suffering is horrible. And his friends are horrible because they just say like, oh, you're a sinner. That must be why your suffering has come upon you. And
like a prosperity gospel. Friends are prosperity gospel people,
So the thing is, and this is what Dr. Ortland, I remember saying to us, we know why Job's suffering. Job doesn't.
Yep.
Job has no idea. Like we're told Job 1 and 2. We're kind of like the omniscient reader.
We're looking over it. Yeah, and looking
exactly,
at it.
Yeah. He has no clue. His friends have no clue. We know why he's suffering, but he doesn't. But that's very different than our own lives, where none of us know why we suffer. But we do know it's under the dominion of the Lord who allows us to suffer in these ways. But we can't say why it's being suffering, what we're supposed to produce. All we know is that this comes from Yahweh, and Yahweh will make all things good at the end.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's helpful for the audience to list out. Do you guys remember all the things that he suffered, all the curses that were put up on him?
Like boils, he lost his, all this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He lost all his children. His house burned down. Yep. I think his animals wife was still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
He lost everything. And he's like, he's being legit throughout the thing. He's like, I don't know why I suffered. And it's because he didn't suffer for anything that he did.
And that's why he keeps like when he's lamenting to God, he's like, what did I do?
Yeah.
Right.
And like, we know from Job 1 and 2, he didn't do anything.
He's like, I even made sacrifices for my sinful kids.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like I've done the righteous thing. I've done what Abel did. Like I made animal sacrifices. You know? And they're like, oh, you know, you sinned or, oh,
it must be this. It must be that. Know? Like,
just you must just have tell, something like,
they like, they always tell him, sin, Job, brother. Just tell us, yeah. Job, just tell
you
us
got some
what
unconfessed
happened.
Sin. You know, let it out, brother, you know, stop hiding it, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, some of them are just kind of like, okay, that's not working. So, you know, don't forget God is utterly just and you're just a worm. Like, you know, who do you think you are, Job? Like to be able to like actually pray to God, like, you know, if you just repent, you know, God would make
away.
It all right.
Yep.
You get all your stuff back.
Wait, his friends' words are very sneaky because they sound on some ways are like, yeah, you're right.
Yep,
but
there's a lot of truth in them.
They just twisted just enough, just like the devil did in the garden.
Here's what his friends should have done for him. Just sat there and been with him and say, hey, we're here for you. Instead of just the second they open their mouths is the second that they failed. That just be with your friend. He suffered. Just acknowledge his suffering and say, hey, man, I'm here for you. Whatever you need.
Yeah.
Well, at the very end, like Elihu is like the youngest.
Yeah.
You know, he's like this young buck that's going to come in and like, you know, make a name for himself. You know,
Elihu. There's all sort of conjecture on who Elihu is.
Oh,
Elihu, the youngest.
There's like a school of thought that it's pre-incarnate Jesus. There's schools of, there's all these schools of thought on him.
Interesting. Yeah. But it's just, it's like he comes in at the end and, you know, kind of he like summarizes all their stuff, but he's also saying things that are 100% true. That's what's hard about Job is like you got to filter out like, okay, it's the right theology, but it's like you're applying it in the wrong way at the wrong time. Right.
Well, it's because, they assume they know why Job is suffering. That's why they say all this stuff. They're like, Job, we know why you're suffering. But the funny thing, like I said, is actually the reader knows why Job is suffering.
Yep.
And the reader knows it's because of Job 1 and 2. It's not for what Job has done. It's what's been done to him. And so you can look at the friends like, you actually don't know what you're talking about. You're saying all the right stuff, but you don't know why he's suffering. So,
and I think that's why, you know, it's like, as I, you know, back in the day when I preached through it, try to explain to the congregation, like, why do we call Job wisdom literature? Because it's, you know, we can see the story from beginning to end. He couldn't.
Yep.
So it's like, yeah, how do we take the right theology about God and like wisely apply it? You know, yeah. Is God sovereign? Yes. So somebody comes to the pastor or comes to you as a Christian and is like, hey, I'm really struggling with, you know, fear. You know, I don't know. Maybe somebody said this online, you know, yesterday or whatever, but, I'm really struggling with fear here, you know, and you're like, well, you don't trust the sovereignty of God. You know, God is 100% sovereign. Like, why would you ever be afraid of anything? You know, fear is the right theology.
Of course.
Of course, it's the right theology. Like, yeah, God's sovereign, but like, how does that help me right now?
Yeah.
You know, what about divorce proceedings,
if their child just had cancer?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Or what about just like, you know, even in just like the theological realm, like, hey, what about God's compassion? Like, maybe I need to hear that right now.
Yeah.
A little more than God's, you know, overarching sovereignty, you know, working all things for good, which doesn't look like that right now, let alone all the things in my world, you know.
You could be suffering and have fear and still trust in the Lord.
I even think this may sound heretical to like, at some points, like, you're not going to have trust in the Lord. You're like, I don't know why you're doing this. Lord, I have no idea why. And yes, there's an overarching trust that he is the Lord.
Or you have trust. I would say you have trust, but like, you just don't, it doesn't feel very strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm not talking about the degrees of trust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you have 100% degree versus 58%.
Yeah. That's why I'm very careful with suffering and what they, like, what we tell them to think. Yep. It's like, there's a wide range of stuff, and we can absolutely say that God is sovereign. I don't know why he's doing this to you. I don't know why you're undergoing this. All I know is God is sovereign, and I'm going to be here for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you guys say that? Sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to say, you know, but God's also a patient God. He's also a compassionate God.
Yep.
God is love. Like, you know, people need to hear, like we just need to let people be human at times and, you know, go through their humanity, right? And be there for them and encourage them.
We're not just spiritual beings who physical things don't happen to. We're psychological and physical beings that have stuff.
And maybe your job at that point is just to be there for them and just listen and, like, you know, just pray.
Yep.
You know, and just, hey, you know, the Lord's compassionate and kind, and I don't know how it's all going to work out, but it is. And then maybe later on, after like the struggle kind of passes, then you say, hey, don't, you know, let's talk about that. You know, wow.
Shut up until you're asked to talk.
Yeah. Wasn't that amazing though? How God was like in total control, but we couldn't see it at the time, you know? Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, would you guys say that Job's friends' bad theology is kind of a works-based theology? They're like, oh, you're not doing the right thing. You kind of like lost God's favor. And so, you know, this
not
is
not necessarily.
I would say it's more like a prosperity. I don't want to say works in the sense of like a legalism, but it's more like a prosperity.
Oh, yeah.
Because they keep telling him, like, hey, if you just repent, you get all your stuff back.
Yeah. I think they have, this is again, they understand the law and they understand like kind of repercussions of human sin. They understand that stuff.
And that we're all
They're applying it with supposed omniscient knowledge on what Job is going through. Mm. And they're applying it wrongly. That like I said, you just got to shut up and let Job go through his thing and just be there for him and say, I don't know what God's doing, but I know God's doing everything for his good and his glory. Yep. But for right now, I'm not sure what he's doing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the biggest question too, is just like, why does God do this? Why put him through all this stuff?
I've got an answer that I'm leaving until the end.
Well, like, I think too, you know,
well, not for why God's doing all things, but specifically in Job.
Right. Yeah. You know, that's the whole point. Like, we don't know. We're not omniscient. We don't know what God does all things. Like, where were we during creation? That's what God is asking Job at the end. Like, how do you know? Do you want to micromanage all of creation and see how it is? Like, so there's no way a man can do that. So, but I think the thing too is that God is revealing Job's true character through his suffering. And why, I mean, the question is like, but why
I wouldn't quite say his true character through suffering, but he's showing Job his character through suffering, not necessarily Job's character through suffering.
Yeah.
Because Job, like, really, Job doesn't deserve this.
Well, Job needs a mediator and a redeemer.
I'll get to that in a sec. Yep.
Yeah. So that's what is kind of pointing Christ focus is like, he needs
I wouldn't even say that. What, yeah, I'll get to it. But yeah, I people make a lot of hay as like Job 28, 29, whatever it is, or 13, something. I forget the reference. I wouldn't even say that, but I'll get to what I'm about to say soon.
Okay. Well, here's another way of saying it. The question is how is God just? Because he is fully just and he's fully loving, yet Job is going through these things.
Yep. Yeah, I have no idea.
We know Jesus was, I'm not meaning to just jump ahead and ignore everything else, but I mean, we know that Christ did not deserve the punishment that he got on the cross.
Well, actually, he did deserve the punishment because he was treated as a sinner.
He's treated as a sinner.
He himself did not deserve, but he took upon
the
sins of his people. And so he took upon the judgment.
He's fully righteous.
Yeah. And that's where in the book of Job, Job talks about his Redeemer living and he trusts in his Redeemer living. I think that's a rather obvious kind of Christ connection, but the flow of the book of Job, where it starts off with a garden scene, with a temptation from the serpent, with a righteous sufferer whom did not have a reason to suffer. He's described as righteous, at least in a way, not perfectly righteous like Jesus is, but righteous in maybe like the Noahic sense. There's no reason for him to suffer, and yet he does suffer. And then he's at the end of the book, he's risen up back to not just his former life, but he's given riches beyond his wildest dreams. He's given a wife, he's given a house, he's given cattle, he's given livestock, everything. So as it were, a righteous one whom is tempted does not give in to temptation and then goes under suffering, even though he didn't give in to temptation, and then is risen up at the end with all of the glory and the riches and honor. I mean, what other better picture do you get than that's being Jesus?
Yep. Yeah, no, yeah, that was good. I hope I didn't misspeak on saying the thing about, you know, Jesus on the cross, whatnot.
I think you knew what I was trying to say.
I think a lot of people say Jesus didn't
deserve to suffer. As yes, of course, Jesus in himself didn't deserve to suffer.
Right.
But he took upon himself the form of a servant under the law, took upon the condemnation of the law, and did so justly according to Romans 3 and Romans, all part of Roman. Like he did so justly so that God can be just and forgive us our sins and give us righteousness.
Because it had to be applied justly. And so he took it. Yeah.
Yep.
So because we only have 5 minutes left, let's just jump right to maybe God's response to Job and the epilogue. What do you guys say about that? Kind of the end of Job.
Danny, you want to start off on the epilogue?
Well, I'm kind of enjoying listening to what you have to say since you read this phenomenal book that I have not read yet. So what are your thoughts? And I'll see if I can add anything.
I'll have to get you this book. I love this book and it changed the way I view Job. But at the end of the book, you can kind of see Job towards the end. He's getting a little annoyed at like, which, you know what? Like makes sense because his friends are like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Well, why are you suffering? We know why you're suffering. And Job's like, just shut up. I don't deserve this. I don't know why God has given this to me. And there's been conjecture at the end as like, does Job trust in Yahweh's perfect plan? But I think instead of it really being like a rebuke against Job, as in like, hey, this is why you're suffering, it's Yahweh displaying his character at the end and saying, I am sovereign over everything. I'm sovereign over your suffering. I'm sovereign over creation. It's easy to question all this stuff, whether or not this is righteous and why this is falling upon you. But I'm the one who causes all things. I'm the one who takes things away. I'm the one who gives things. Because right after his speech, right after Yahweh's whirlwind speech from 38 to 42, what does Yahweh do for Job? He restores everything back to Job and more. So it can't be really a judgment like a righteous judgment against Job. Like, hey, Job, you screwed up big time. It's him displaying his character and saying, yeah, let me give you what you had and more, because you did suffer. I wouldn't say necessarily unjustly, but you didn't suffer for a reason. Like, there's no specific reason why you suffered. It's to show my character, my glory, and one who's to come, who's going to suffer in himself unjustly, but for his people justly, so that he, the suffering one, himself is given glory and then displays and shares that glory with all of his people.
Job also knows in earth. I keep saying Job. God also knows intimately well the things that he took away from Job, including his children. Yep. He knows the souls and the hearts of the children that he took away from.
Yeah, he
Job,
so. Increases, multiplies, and makes Job fruitful. At the end of Job 42, he gives him all the blessings, which is exactly what he promised to Adam.
Yeah.
So Danny, what do you got to add on?
Yeah, no, you know, yeah, I mean, Job's like, you know, like the sort of classical, like, theodicy.
Yeah.
You know, like, why, like, how is God justified, you know, in, you know, wicked stuff, evil stuff, sinful stuff, whatever. But ultimately, you know, the book's about, it's not so much about Job, but it's about, yeah, it's about God, his glory,
mm-hmm.
His purpose, you know, ultimately, you know, as human beings, like, we don't 100% know, like, why God does things, right?
No.
He's God. We know he's just and we know he's good, and somehow he's
always sovereign. Yeah. So there's nothing outside of his control. We know that.
So yeah, that's good. And I was just going to say, you know, I'm pretty sure I brought this up, you know, a while back when I preached with Job, but it just reminds me of the story when Jesus, in John 9, about the man who was born blind.
Yep.
And so Jesus says, you know, it wasn't because of, you know, his sins or his parents' sins, but that the works of God might be manifested.
Exactly.
Mm. So, you know, it's ultimately like things happen because in God's ultimate purpose, his decree, as we call it in theology, God has purposed like his own glory,
mm-hmm.
his own will to be manifested. And so that can be hard. That's hard for us as human beings.
Yeah.
It's hard for us as believers, let alone like, you know, non-believers to like come to grasp that. But like, as a believer, you can start to see, as a Christian, you can start to see, you know, like the whole, your whole life, kind of like how we look at Job, like from the top down, right? To see, you know, okay, this is what God's doing. This is how he does things. I may not know always why, but I know that it's good. And, you know, so Job's an illustration to us of Romans 8:28, that all things work for good.
Yeah.
Like for the good, like for those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. And so
we don't know what that looks like, but Yahweh knows what that looks like. The Lord knows what that looks like.
And the promise is not that everybody goes through suffering and gets, you know, multiplication of blessings.
Exactly.
That's not the purpose of Job.
No.
Because some people are martyrs and their heads are cut off in Revelation.
Yeah. But, I mean, the purpose of Job is like this Adamic, Abrahamic blessing that's given to him. That's not prescriptive for how all Christians are to suffer and are given things, but is showing us this theme throughout scripture of the blessing for the suffering one who will give this blessing to those who are found in him.
Yep. Yeah. So the Christological part is ultimately like the most important thing for us to see, since Jesus said the whole Bible is about him. And you see that theme here. That idea, like so old, like that ancient idea it's, you know, goes way back into the very, you know, earliest points of redemptive history, that there is one to come.
Yep.
He's going to bless his people with this. And, you know, I would just say as a pastor, you know, like I just said, you know, the point is not like, oh, you're going to go through suffering and you're going to come out, you know, and you're going to be bigger and better and happier than ever before. No.
Yeah.
That might be you. That might be you. But not everybody is that. And so, you know, God has a purpose in whatever he's leading you through. For some people, it's to be, you know, like utterly blessed like Job.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can just be an example to the world of, wow, God is so amazing. God's so powerful and God is almighty. And all riches belong to him anyway. For other people, it's going to be, hey, you're going to be a martyr for the faith. You're not going to get out of prison. You're not going to get out of the situation where you're going to be killed for your faith. But then that too is used to magnify God, right? That the person had faith in the face of, you know, death itself. So God uses all things for his glory and ultimately for our good. So whether that's an earthly good, temporary blessing like Job, or whether it's, hey, God wanted you to be with him in heaven. Like, ultimately good is to be in heaven with him. Yep, so right. That means that your life is going to come to an end. And that's, you know, the Lord gives, the Lord takes, as Job said, blessed be his name. So,
yep. And to throw this in there too, the Bible also agrees that within the Bible, it also agrees that Job is a real historical person, because Ezekiel and James talk about him due to his righteousness and his perseverance. So in Ezekiel and in
he
James.
He could be historical. He could be kind of like a parable of sorts, but it's certainly a real like
story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's whether or not he's like a real historical person. He could have been a real historical person, or he could have been like what Jesus' parables were, still true, 100% true, but used for a specific end.
Either way, I mean, the point is there. We're going to assume he was a real historical person, but other than that, I know we're out of time, but we did. You got one. Do you just want to give a quick answer? Who you guys think the behemoth and the Leviathan is?
I have no idea. I was just you know, buffing your chops. Yeah.
Leviathan, at least according to Dr. Ortland, is some sort of serpentine figure.
It's not a dinosaur.
That is like based on the serpent in the garden. Then
correct. Oh, yeah. Yep.
So basically, whatever it is. On Earth, you know, real, correct.
it has a real on Earth,
but it has like an analog body. Back to the garden.
Correct. Yeah, that's what Dr. Ortland said. It's like
whatever it was, probably some
whale of some sort. Whatever it was on Earth, but it's its typological function was as a serpent.
So whether it was a real animal or what animal, who cares?
Yep.
Right. Yeah. It points back to the garden. Yeah.
Yep.
Because in the garden, Satan was only allowed to take on the form of the lowest of creation, which is a beast.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a snake. So, not another human, not even an angel anymore like he was. So he was allowed to take on a beast. So yeah, Leviathan is another, you know,
but a wise beast though, right? So like that's also what's interesting in the garden. It's like crafty. It's like not just like some. You
not
know,
some
gnat.
Stupid thing. Yeah.
Not a gnat.
Right. A gnat.
Yeah. It you says, know, like yeah, there's
smart
a
smart animal, you know?
Yep. A serpent, the craftiest of all the living creatures.
Because Satan was crafty and like smart, quote unquote smart, right? Like, with great knowledge and insight. So
cool.
Anywho.
Yeah.
All right. Good job. If you guys want to find us, if you guys want more of this stuff at your local church, if you guys live in either Southern California, in Orange County, or San Diego, or if you live in the boondocks of Idaho. I'm just kidding, Nick.
The Great Northwest.
You live in the Great Northwest.
Yeah, great.
You can find me. I'll be part of a church plant in the Tustin, Irvine area. We already have a lot of interest in it. Some families and individuals who are going to start coming, but not yet have more information on it, but we have a link in our show notes on the top to join the mailing list for an LPC church in the Tustin, Irvine area. Mm. So Danny, where can they find you?
Peter's like the Where's Waldo of the Reformed world, you know. Like, where's he ultimately going to be right?
This one looks pretty.
Yeah. Which is cool because you know you're not going too far away.
Nope. I can stay in the area.
I'm at the Oceanside United Reformed Church, Oceanside URC, OURC, here in Carlsbad, Oceanside, North County of San Diego. And OceansideURC.org is the website. You can find us on social media, find the church. You can find me. We'd love to welcome you to worship. We meet right on the beach, which is awesome. And then, if you don't live here, or you're not going to be ever in this area for who knows whatever reason, but you know somebody that might be here, please, welcome them. Let them know that they'd be welcomed. We just had a guy literally walked in 2 weeks ago. Into church and became a believer. So people find us and people are welcomed to join us. And, we trust the Lord is going to use us to not just to bring the gospel to them, but also to help them to shepherd them and to lead them through the Lord's path.
Cool. And then Nick, where can they find you?
Yeah, I don't live in California anymore. I miss the weather, but Trinity Orthodox Presbyterian Church, same
Nick
denomination.
Nick is the Where's Waldo of the geographical region. Nobody knows where he lives. Nick is very secretive.
Jumping around.
That's true.
Right? Yeah, well, I was going to say, it's the same denomination Peter's in the OPC. Trinity Ortho- Trinity OPC. John Morsch is the pastor. You guys know him. South Orange County. So geographically, so people know it's south, a little bit south of Peter, a little bit north of Danny. That's a great church if somebody's looking for one in South Orange County or visiting, or, you know, I plan to pop in there when I visit from out of town. If I'm not in San Diego and visit Danny's, or
yeah,
yeah.
Or you're so not in Irvine, Tustin, visiting yeah. Peter.
Oh, I'll visit you guys's, but yeah, yeah, if I, you know.
Do you go to church in Idaho, or you just left it?
I go to church, man. Yeah, you absolutely. Didn't de-church? Ain't good. No de-churching here. Yeah, cool. We've been checking out a couple remember that NAPARC term. So a couple NAPARC churches in Northern Idaho.
Any really any good. Solid MacArthurite churches up there?
Oh gosh,
I don't know. I actually clueless. I
gotta stir the pot a little bit here.
I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to.
We're gonna watch
anybody.
This. Not know what I'm talking about, but yeah, Peter and I know what's going on.
Yeah,
I actually not trying to protect anybody. I actually don't. I have no idea.
It's all good. I'm just
my hands in the sand a little bit on some things.
Danny's maybe just joshing you.
Yeah, I know. I'm just Dannying him. but I'm checking out a PCA here in Kootenai County as well.
It's Emmanuel PCA. Is that the name of it?
Yeah. It's a good one. Seth Miller. Shout out to Seth Miller out there. Good dude.
His wife is the Presby girl.
Yeah. And then the Covenant OPC.
Is that a podcast or something?
Well, yeah. They're part of the Presbycast kind of network thing.
Oh, okay.
Presby
okay.
Girl thing. Yeah. They're good stuff.
Yeah. Shout out to her. Cool. And then Covenant OPC is David Graves. Good dude. So, yeah. Nice. We need a URC up here now.
We have URCs in Idaho.
We don't. Not
in
my
area.
15
of you up in Idaho.
Not that far north, as far as you know.
Not that far north. Yeah. No. Although I know that there are plans to go up there, from what I've heard, in the relative future.
Maybe in the Spokane area.
So.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Somewhere in that region. Yep.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Well, next week we have every Christian's favorite book, The Song of Solomon.
Oh, yeah.
Go through, what is the Song of Solomon and how to have sex as a Christian.
Didn't the rabbi say you couldn't read Song of Solomon until you're 30?
It's your priestly age. Yep. Yeah. This will be a fun one to go through, Song of Solomon.
Nice.
We're gonna see what it's actually talking about, although it's not talking about sex. It's talking about a lot more than just that.
Yep. Cool. Yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.
Bye. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode in our 7th season, Jesus and All of Scripture. Please make sure you subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast catcher or on our YouTube channel. Give us a rating on Apple or Spotify and write a review. These really do help the show reach a wider audience as we continue with our goal of bridging the gap to reform Christian theology for all peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations. We'll see you next week for another episode.